Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. Chris Ann Hall here, KRISANNEHALL.com, where we are liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. Welcome, JC.
Howdy.
Touting the Army hat today, my man.
Okay.
Yesterday you had the Navy hat on. Now you're representing the right side.
I hear you.
We are so happy to be here with you today to bring you the current events from a constitutional, principled, and historical perspective. And there's so much going on these days, JC. It's just amazing to me that we simply don't have a lot more going on in the mainstream media than just, you know, the continual COVID mantra. So I wanted to start off today talking about some things that have been coming through to me through social media. We've got the greatest people. I don't even need a research team, really, because people are constantly sending me stuff and letting me give me tips and saying, Chris Ann, what do you think about this? What can you give us an explanation of this? And you remember Terry and Rich, right, from the In Defense of Liberty gun training that we have.
Right.
She sent me this, and she said, surely there's a legal liberty constitutional lesson in here somewhere. And I thought, and I read this, instead of dismissing, the Michael Flynn judge opens his court to litigate Russiagate. And what's very, very interesting about this, and I'm not sure if a lot of people are going to get into this from a legal perspective. So just to give you a little bit of background and to make this really long story short, the prosecutors prosecuting Flynn filed a motion to dismiss the charges against him with prejudice, okay? Now what that means is that once the motion to dismiss is accepted by the judge, then no more prosecution can be brought against him. Now, the complication is that Flynn already pled guilty to the charges. And so it's in the sentencing phase. So it's a little out of order for the prosecutors to file a motion to dismiss, which makes this problem. Now, I'm going to tell you from a prosecutorial perspective, from prosecutors that I know and the experience that I have, if a prosecutor files a motion to dismiss with prejudice, that's pretty much admitting we've got no case ever. Mm-hmm. We don't want to do anything with this. There's nothing to do with this. We don't want to have anything to do with this. We're done with this. We don't want to do this, right? And judges don't get involved at that stage. Because remember, for those of you who don't know, in the criminal process, there are stages. So you have the criminal complaint that usually comes from a person or from a police officer, which is an arrest or a complaint or something. Then that complaint goes to the prosecutor's office for determination of whether charges are going to be filed. Because prosecutors, and I don't want to exaggerate, but given where you are, we get hundreds of complaints that never get filed because the evidence is not there. We can't prove beyond a reasonable doubt. All of these things happen. So we decline to prosecute hundreds of cases. Mm-hmm. And when a case is filed, you're filing on a best intention, right? You're filing on the information that you have. And then when you go through the process, you have the discovery process where you get information from the defense. You are then engaging in depositions where you interview the defense's witnesses. And even along the way, new information can come forward, And the prosecutor will say, yes, we're going forward. No, we're not going forward. We're going to file a motion to dismiss because the charges have already been filed. Or we're going to offer you a sweet plea deal and hope, you know, for the best. Because anytime you go to court, it's really kind of a crapshoot anyway, especially if you have a jury trial and you don't know the judge. So what we've got here with Flynn, and we've gotten past all the stages of filing the charges, giving a plea deal, and Flynn pleading guilty to the charges, which, in my humble opinion, should never happen. And I don't mean to put that out there, but here's the thing. It's a crapshoot when you go to a jury trial. I would rather, me being accused of something, I would rather take my chances with a jury than to plead guilty and have it out there that I'm guilty. And that's part of the problem here that Flynn is having. So he took this plea of guilty to go to the sentencing phase, and now all of this has happened, and the prosecution, through the Department of Justice, has now filed a motion to dismiss with prejudice, saying, okay, new information has come forward since we've gotten this far, and we don't want to take this case. Now where it gets bizarre, the judge has entered himself into the prosecutorial phase and said, I'm not going to dismiss these charges. We're taking this to litigation. How crazy is that? This is, now within the judicial system, there are certain little aspects of checks and balances. And the judge is not supposed to be the person who brings the charges against someone. That's the prosecutor's job. And frankly, in my humble opinion, for the judge to do this is a conflict of interest. Because if the judge is going to be in sitting in judgment of the facts, how can he be the one who says, we are going to file these charges? Because the decision to file the charges means that the person who's filing them believes beyond a reasonable doubt that the person can be convicted of the crime. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So for the judge to say, no, I'm not going to take this motion to dismiss from the prosecutor. I'm actually going to put this forward for litigation. And then he goes bizarre step number two. He says, I'm going to open this case to amicus briefs for people who believe that that he should be prosecuted.
Like taking a poll.
Exactly. And it's crazy. This judge, I'm my head is in bizarro land right now reading all about this. This is just crazy. And I mean, number one, a prosecutor, you know, you got the Department of Justice. Their prosecuting attorneys are not. See, there are levels of dismissal. You can dismiss a case without prejudice, which opens the door for future prosecution if new evidence comes to light. But the prosecutors have said, we want to dismiss with prejudice, meaning nothing is going to come ever.
Well,
and the judge is saying, okay, I hear you, but I'm going to make this go through prosecution, and because I don't like what you got to say, I'm going to have outside entities offer their legal briefs on what should happen to him.
And that's after the 2,000 deep state operatives complained?
This is everything. This is everything in consideration, because the whole thing is what brought the prosecutor's office to dismiss with prejudice. So
they said in their motion, right? This is the prosecutor's motion to dismiss. They said Flynn did not lie, but the reports were, quote, wordsmithed to make it appear that he did.
Mm-hmm.
You have the prosecutor saying that.
Yes, which is why they want to dismiss with prejudice. Now, here's the thing, JC. This is really close to judicial misconduct.
Yeah, but if It's strange because then if you, okay, let's litigate it. You're essentially going to have his defense attorneys and then the prosecution, which agrees with his defense attorneys. That's who's going to be trying the case. What exactly is the point?
Well,
why would the judge, why would you go forward?
Because
when you have a prosecution saying, we don't think he's guilty. What do you think the prosecution is going to do when they put on the case?
Well, that's where the amicus briefs come in. So when the judge accepts the amicus briefs, then he can open the courtroom for the attorneys of the amicus briefs to present their arguments. He's trying to replace the prosecutor's office through these
ringers.
With ringers. Yeah, there you go. With ringers. And the fact that he's doing that, I know, the fact that he's doing this, this Judge Sullivan, he should have to recuse himself from this case.
He should have to go to jail.
He should be disbarred, you know, in the very least. But this is absolutely crazy. So now what we have are a group of attorneys, self-styled the Watergate prosecutors, who filed a notice of intent to file an amicus brief. Now, Flynn's attorney is objecting both to the Watergate prosecutors' notice. They're calling themselves this, the Watergate prosecutors. A notice and to the court's broader discretion, a decision to accept amicus briefs in a criminal case. This doesn't happen like that. In a criminal case. And look, this is what's crazy, right? Because the amicus briefs are not coming. Generally speaking, when you submit an amicus brief, you're submitting it in aid of defense of someone. Because an amicus brief is what, you know, it's a friend of the court's brief to help lift up and aid the defendant in their defense. It's a way to compensate for when a defendant is charged with something and maybe their attorney isn't quite an expert on this. We see this a lot in civil rights cases. It's First Amendment cases. So you have somebody who's taken on the case and they're saying, look, and I'll just put this out there right now because this covers the whole show, JC, but we've talked about this. You and I have talked about this. Constitutional law is an extremely specialized area of law. I mean, it's like neurosurgery if you're going to compare it to the medical field. And even in constitutional law are even separate specializations. So some will practice First Amendment law, some will practice Second Amendment law, some will practice Fourth Amendment law, some will practice eminent domain law. So even within those things, you have very, very specialized areas. On top of that, constitutional attorneys don't make money. I mean, most of the cases that you do are civil rights cases where people's rights are being violated and they don't have deep pockets. So you're doing all of this pro bono. So number one, you don't have the money driving a lot of people to be constitutional attorneys. People are constitutional attorneys because they have a heart for it. And number two, because of the highly specialized area of the field, you can't know everything about everything. So you take on these amicus briefs, these friends of the court briefs that come in and say, we're going to help you by offering you a lift, basing on our expertise and our practice and our experience. And the judge is opening that beyond defense into prosecution.
But the nature of this case is not going to be that. It's going to be a bunch of political hackery is what you're going to get.
And that's the whole purpose. I mean, why would they call themselves Watergate prosecutors? The prosecution is a government entity. It is not a private corporation. Do you know what kind of doors this opens? Well, I understand.
Can we insert that phrase?
Even under the illusion that they're governmental, not corporate entities. Now you're just opening the door and saying, you know what?
You're admitting it.
Anybody can be a prosecutor now. This, for me, JC, this is, I have goosebumps because this is just, this is judicially chilling for me.
Okay.
This is actually bringing, and I want to say this, JC, so we can bounce off this. I have been complaining now with growing complaints for 10 years of the growing power of the court of public opinion. This is legalizing the court of public opinion.
He's literally making it part of the process.
He is literally making the court of public opinion process in judicial process. I'm telling you, this is an outrage. It's popping my goosebumps out because I can't express to you how outrageous this is.
Can I, not quite devil's advocate, but let's just say, so let's say I'm the average Joe, you know, I just watch the news and moderately follow this thing. And so if I look at Sullivan's history of a guy who seemed to try to stay above partisan political controls, right? If we assume he's just making a brain fart here, what would possibly be his reasoning? Like, what would he think was legit reasoning? If we're saying, like, this guy's not trying to craft it to target Flynn to make it go his way, what could his argument be? Like, why would a judge do this other than assuming the worst? Like, this is crazy.
Okay, so I don't understand. Yeah, I'll jump on the devil's advocate here for a second, okay? I don't think that you have to assume the worst. The problem here is this is a rewriting of the judicial system, okay? Completely rewriting the judicial system. And that's good or bad intention. That is something beyond his authority. Now, here's the thing. Now, we've talked about this before, and I'm just jumping on the devil's advocate thing. What if you have a situation, okay, where you, I'm gonna change this completely now. What if you have a situation where you have a sheriff, like in The Walking Tall scenario, okay, who is absolutely and completely corrupt, and people are filing charges against this sheriff, and the local DA is in collusion with this sheriff and will not go forward with prosecution, right? So the good intentions that he might have in this might be that he believes that Flynn deserves to be prosecuted because it is political that he's not being prosecuted. Does that make sense? Does my analogy
could be thinking they're dropping the case because of the influence of William Barr.
Yes.
Trump over Barr, Barr over the DOJ. Mm-hmm. And this is political. So he wants to hear what experts have to say? That's what you're saying?
Let's get some other input. I'm digging in deep here. I'm digging in really deep. And that's the only thing. If I want to apply good intentions to this guy, that would be the only thing that I could say. But here's the problem. He's rewriting the judicial system. He's rewriting it. It's not how it works. And yes, well, he there's said, opportunity for corruption in the system that it's in, but the answer is not rewriting the judicial system by a judge behind the bench.
Well, let me ask you something about the amicus process, phenomenon, whatever. Is it, because as I understood that amicus brief thing, that's not usually at the request of the judge, is it?
No.
Like, the judge doesn't say, hey, can anybody send me an amicus brief on this? That's somebody on the outside looking in submits it to the court. They either accept or they don't, mm-hmm. or whatever. When does a court poll the country and say, okay, guys, send me some amicus briefs? I've never heard of that. Have you ever heard of that? I mean, maybe that happens, but Does that sound unusual in your experience?
It is unusual.
It sounds bizarre. I'd like to poll the gallery.
Yeah.
For what do you think about this? The guy's got, he has an attorney.
Right.
Sidney Powell's his attorney.
Right.
What do you mean? Well, we want to hear from other attorneys.
Yeah, what? But no, wait. But the amicus brief process here is not about Flynn's attorney.
I know.
It's the other side, which makes it so bizarre.
Okay, that's extra bizarre.
No. That is the bizarre part. Because an amicus
brief, those are the prosecutors.
Those are the prosecutors.
And he's saying, okay, let's hear from somebody else. These are the people actually
what the prosecutor has
trying
to
say, the case, right. Prosecuting the case. I'm going to ask Johnny Cochran what he thinks, and we'll get back to you, prosecution.
Right.
That is wacky.
I mean, they're calling themselves prosecutors.
I wonder, has that ever happened?
No.
Have you ever had a judge say to the prosecution, okay, we're going to get a second opinion, and I'm going to poll Legal America? Some legal historians tell me, has that ever happened? That sounds nuts. So how can you not, first off, let's go back to the beginning. I got a question for you. And this has been kind of the take, back with the, what's his name, Comey, the Comey FBI and all of this, you essentially obtained a confession through faulty due process. Like the process that you used to acquire this confession was illegitimate.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that then, you can't look at anything else, right? It follows from there, you're done. It's thrown out. You can't use that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, isn't it true then really in the legal realm, really there is no confession? Because they can't accept that. That's what they're laying out. Look, here's how this obtained. These statements were essentially falsified. They use the word wordsmith, which I don't understand why attorneys do that.
That's a very nice way of saying lying.
Why would they do that? They falsified official records.
Well, because the falsification then is a crime. And so when you can say wordsmith, what you're doing is you're not accusing someone of a crime.
And making yourself have to prove that or something?
And make yourself have to prove that, making yourself have to prosecute that. Mm-hmm. Right? Maybe they don't want to go after these people, right? They don't want to go after these people.
I don't know. I was just looking at not to muddy the waters, the case in Georgia, the kid, the Scuttles kid, I think his last name, that got, or this may have been a different one, not in Georgia. There was a kid that, these, New Mexico maybe, they had this guy down, and he's at the back of the, under the car, and he's pounding his face in, I'm trying to subdue him, I'm trying to gain control, and the officer's just pounding his face in the hamburger meat, bust up his orbital socket, crushes his face bones, all this kind of stuff. And then apparently, I was looking into it, the kid had a previous case against him that was thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the same kind of idea, I think it was Supreme Court or some federal court of appeals, and was saying the way that you attain the evidence was not proper. It was not proper due process.
Absolutely.
And so
It's what we call the fruit of the poisonous tree.
Yeah, and the wording from the court was pretty much, we can go no further.
Mm-hmm.
We can't even look at the rest of this stuff. We can't even take another step because you didn't follow the right procedure to acquire this.
Mm-hmm.
Case dismissed. So this is kind of the same argument the prosecution is laying out. The prosecution, not the defense, the prosecution is saying the stuff was essentially illegally obtained, even though they're not using that word for whatever bizarre reason.
they're changing the semantics.
This was illegally obtained, so you don't have a case. You can't have a case.
Yeah. Now, let me be clear, because it's it's not unheard of for a court to ask for amicus briefs. What's unheard of is for the court to ask for prosecutorial amicus briefs.
That's just
on the
crazy.
Prosecutor's side. That's crazy because of there. I mean, prosecutorial discretion is file or not file. And this is different than the walking tall kind of thing that I've given you because we've got hundreds of pages of information now that proves the guy didn't lie. That actually people lied about him lying. So this is all,
but
like I said, this is the rewriting.
People don't hear that in the mainstream.
No, they won't hear that. Nobody wants to go through the trouble of making the explanation like we have.
All they see is Trump's buddy Flynn is being bailed out by Trump's lapdog William Barr.
Right.
That's the narrative.
Right. That's going to be the MSM narrative.
And so therefore, the 2,000 deep state lackeys are heroes, freedom fighters. Judge Sullivan is a hero trying to protect the rule of law and the judicial process. When the reality is completely the opposite, it's 180 degree opposite. They're trying to protect a corrupt system. The 2,000 lackeys that came out, it's like they got caught. Their deep state corruption was exposed, and now they're coming to the defense of their corrupt system. And what we've seen happen to Flynn and Roger Stone and all these other people, that happens to the common man on the street every day of the world. That's the sad part about this, that it takes an attack on the president. It takes an attack on these high-level politicians for this to be even a topic of conversation. When this happens 1,000 times a day to people who have no money, who have no platform, who have no voice, who have no name, and nobody cares.
Yeah, these amicus briefs, the other thing has just occurred to me in the bizarre, I mean, as I keep thinking about this and I keep running this through my head, JC, it just gets more and more bizarre all the time. Amicus briefs don't come in at the trial level. They come in at the appeal level. So there's another unheard of thing. So number one, amicus briefs are generally as the defense attorney has said here, his objection is letting in these submission of amicus briefs in a criminal case. So you've got
her
them.
Objection is Powell.
That's the Flynn's attorneys.
Female.
Yeah, her attention. Her. Oh right. Sorry. Her objection. Okay. So, it's you got amicus briefs coming in on the prosecutor side, at the objection of the prosecutors. You have amicus briefs
that's hard
coming.
To get past.
I know. It really. You have amicus briefs coming in a criminal case, which are generally only seen in civil rights cases, like I said, in constitutional law issues, in property law issues and stuff like that. I think sometimes you even see them in insurance law, you know, when you're getting really specialized. And at the appeals level, not at this level. And for the judge to request amicus, not necessarily unusual, but given all the other unusual facts, to request an amicus brief for the prosecutorial side, I cannot see this as anything but the formalization of the court of public opinion as a part of our judicial process. What's next on that? What's next? Do we have social media testimony now? You know, I have these big things in my, these sci-fi visions in my head of mob mentality, off with his head. You know, what we're reverting to, JC, is Roman Colosseum days. You put the guy in the Coliseum and you let the crowd give you a thumbs up or a thumbs down. This is not due process. How do you have, and here's the thing, JC, if this sets a precedent, if this is not overturned, because it could be overturned, it should be overturned at the appeals level. I mean, seriously, this should be a no-brainer overturn if they actually go through the trial and he's found convicted.
Yeah, but we're through the looking glass. Yeah, this should have been a no-brainer from the get-go.
Right. All right. So here's the thing. What you have now is setting a precedent, and I want us all to think about this. With the how many judges that did Barack Obama appoint on the federal level?
Too many.
Way too many. You're setting a precedent now where the judges can go fact shopping. Where the judges now build their own cases based on their own personal beliefs or understandings of the facts of the case.
Right. That's going back to, I mean, you may as well be in the European courts where it's just kind of the judge.
The star chambers.
The judge prosecutor sitting there. And
that's the star chambers.
So what, I mean, what's the point of attorneys at that point? What's the point of anybody defending you? You're basically, the judge is doing it all, which we know that, I mean, that's one of the big problems in the courtroom anyway, when the judge takes the reins of the process and steers it where he wants.
Right.
I mean, that happens to people, that happens to everyday people all the time.
But now we're codifying it. When you
were prosecuting, that was one of the things we talked about, and you told me, the judge is king. The judge is king, right? Because people would ask you, what about this, what about that? Well, the law says this, the law says that. However, then you got the element of the judge.
Right.
And the judge can influence and steer what's going on in that courtroom in spite of what the law says.
Which is why I would never, as a defense attorney, tell any of my clients to have what we call a bench trial where it's just the judge judging over you. No way. I would ever do that. There would always be a jury trial.
Unless he's your uncle.
Me. Yeah. Well, even so, I...
Uncle that likes you.
Right. And I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that.
It's nuts. This is bizarro world. But I think, just like you said, you know, on the other hand, it's an exposure. This thing continues to be an exposure of this system. As I said, this happens all over every day. And now you're seeing it in the light. You're seeing it brought into the light. And as you said, they're now making it the norm.
They're declaring this will be the norm. This is how precedent works. Mm-hmm. We're not going to amend any constitutions. We're not going to amend any judicial
rules of criminal procedure.
We're just going to add a precedent to it that says
you won't find
the
this.
Judge can do this.
You won't find what he's doing written down as part of the process anywhere.
No. So now, of the judge's authority to simply ask that he's not supposed to actually be involved in.
Yeah, to be clear, this is a federal case, right? It's Department of Justice. It is the executive branch's choice, decision.
Well, here's the thing. Let me explain this. Maybe
not the judge.
So a lot of times, I think sometimes stuff happens in my head that people don't get because of my legal background, right? Sort of like being math.
You just go ahead and connect dots.
I connect dots. I'm a dot connector, so I just connect
dot
dots. So let me go back and maybe just connect something here. The different role between a judge in a criminal prosecution case and the different role of a judge in an appeal case, all right? When a judge is sitting on the bench in a criminal trial, His job is to be the judge of the law and the facts. Okay? He's not supposed to go investigate his own facts. Mm-hmm. He's not the investigator. As a matter of fact, the judge, like a jury, you know, if you have a jury trial, you see people all the time. Part of the questions that we ask the jury, do you have any awareness of this case outside the courtroom? And they'll sequester juries so they won't read newspapers, because it's not the job of the jury to collect facts. The mm-hmm. only facts that can be considered are the ones that are presented in the courtroom. And when the judge is acting as the jury, he can't go gather his own facts. He can only use in judgment the facts that are presented to him in the trial. So the prosecution's facts are to be presented by the prosecutor. The defense facts are to be presented by the defense attorney. And the judge then, all he has are two baskets. What's in that basket? And that's at the criminal trial level. Now, at the appeals level, the judge is not judging the facts and the law. The judge is judging how the jury or the judge in the criminal case handled the material. Mm-hmm. That's why the amicus brief becomes important, because generally the question is the prosecutor violated some criminal, some civil rights procedure. The law enforcement violated some criminal, some civil rights procedure, and the judge ignored it, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to have the defense attorney say, I object to that evidence because it violates blah, 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 blah. And then the judge says, overruled. And so now you have a point of appeal. But what we're doing now is the judge is acting as an appeals attorney in an issue that hasn't even been settled yet. So I don't know if I just made that more confusing, it's a different roles here.
No, they made it confusing. This thing has been turned into some TV court drama. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not how court actually is supposed to function. No. This is something you'd see on some TV show. And I think that's the problem with the general public. They're so full of NCIS and LA law and on all this garbage, Perry Mason, whatever. That's what people know. And so the general public doesn't see anything wrong with this. They think this is how it works. They have no idea that the precedent is being set to shred your due process protections.
And if this can happen to somebody on this level, it's only going to be further exaggerated to the general population, because number one, it will become precedent at a high level, at a high visibility level, right? And number two, it'll be applied at the lower level without anybody noticing, right? It's like you said, it's going to happen, and then people are going to object and like, oh, well, you know, we've got this precedent already. What can I do about it? Because we have determined in American society quite erroneously that precedent is law. And so what you'll get is attorneys saying, well, we can't really argue with the judge now. The precedent's been settled. And then you're in this negative feedback loop, because precedent becomes the rule of law, so you don't argue the precedent, and so never gets challenged and never gets overturned.
Well, look what they've done to Flynn and the other guy. They drained him of millions, mm-hmm. with Flynn, then turned on his son. What is a regular Joe going to do against that? You don't have millions. You don't have this name. You don't have political backing. How am I going to stand? If this is what we can do,
right.
And the judge can essentially go outside the bounds and start fishing for, give me reasons why this guy should go to prison. I mean, he's basically having to fight, I mean, what'll amount to hundreds of attorneys. So it's his attorney versus hundreds of attorneys recruited by the judge.
Right.
So his one attorney is fighting the judge, fighting the system, and fighting not fighting the prosecution anymore, because they're ready to be done
with
it.
He's gone out and found his own prosecutors.
Right.
I mean, that's basically what he's done.
Hundreds.
He's found his own prosecutors now, to whom he can pick and choose.
Yeah.
Because that's how the amicus briefs work.
They'll come in by the hundreds.
Amicus briefs work where the judge actually has the discretion to set aside or use or not use the amicus briefs. I mean, I can't. I don't know. I don't know how to convey to the American population how utterly outrageous this is. Utterly and completely outrageous. This, and of course, you know, you're going to have your people that are going to justify this. And I even gave you the devil's advocate, right?
No, all the arguments will be political.
It's corruption and it's this, that, and the other. What's he going to do?
It'll all be political.
Here's the problem. You don't. There are ways to legally adjust the system. There are ways to legally respond to this. If you think that there is prosecutorial misconduct, the judge can seek charges against the prosecutors. The judge has the authority to put a prosecutor in jail for criminal misconduct, for contempt of court. But here's the thing. You can't have them rewriting the whole system because they don't like it.
Well, and these people want to ignore the fact that the person in charge of the of this investigation, James Comey, admitted it was, again, he didn't use the terms, but he admitted it was illegal. It was improper. What does this mean? I wouldn't have gotten away with this under a more organized administration. You don't get away with due process.
You get away with doing the right thing.
A crime.
Yes.
So James Comey essentially admitted this, it was, the interview was conducted illegally.
Well, this is...
And that's just one example.
This is very disturbing to me. Very, very disturbing to me. And I can't... I feel inadequate in expressing
how bad this really is. There are no words. Like, kangaroo court is... doesn't even come close. Like,
no.
that's a gross understatement.
And to talk about the star chambers, people don't even know what that means anymore.
No.
So, I mean, it loses its efficacy and description as well.
This is just short of, you know, dragging the guy out to the guillotine, chopping off his head.
Right.
You know, short of that.
This is a public lynching.
Short of that,
really
this is what you have.
It's like I said, it's gone back to the Roman Colosseums, where the Caesar says thumbs up or thumbs down, you know, and then he looks across the crowd and gets whatever he wants. Right?
Throw Flynn to the lions.
Yeah, that's exactly what this is, and it's just, you know, I, from a personal perspective, I don't have a dog in the fight for Flynn. This is a justice issue.
No,
this is a civil rights issue. This is a due process
issue. Right, I was going to say, that's the dog in the
fight. This is a complete destruction of the judicial process with the swipe and the one gavel. And that's where my dog is in this fight.
Say all that again. The dog in the fight
the
is
dog
due
in
process.
The, fight, the dog in the fight is due process. The dog in the fight is the integrity of the judicial system to guard the rights and the liberties of the people. It's not. See, here's the thing, JC, and you made me say that out loud. Here's the thing. What was the one thing that you heard me say the new prosecutors over and over and over again as I was teaching them?
That you are a prosecutor, not a persecutor.
You are a prosecutor, not a persecutor. This is the problem, okay? We now have a judge who enables and opens the window. The barn doors are open for persecutors on the bench. And this is the dog in the fight. We can't have this. We cannot have this continue like this. Something is going to have to happen. And again, this is just the gradual creeping, JC. You've got the media. Oh my goodness, it is, isn't it? He said, "I'm going to have to pull up that quote." You want to? We talk. I will give you, if you go to libertyfirstuniversity.com.
Yeah, don't forget the classes. You know, you learn about due process.
How it's supposed to work. I have a whole class on the federal judiciary.
What the process is supposed to be. Go to libertyfirstuniversity.com. Sign up for classes today. Online constitutional training. Open to everyone. Self-paced, short, understandable video segments. You get Chris Ann's wisdom, Chris Ann's knowledge, experience, in-depth teaching, connecting the dots like nobody else does. And you will see why this is so troubling. I mean, one thing that I've heard over and over, and this is the thing about the constitutional training, by the way, Liberty First University, people hear, oh, Constitution, boring. But you will hear things that you've never heard and never heard of, things that struck people so strongly last time I talked to a few of the students, that story of James Otis Jr. This is what it reminds me of, James mm-hmm. Otis Jr. fighting a corrupt court system, corrupt judicial system, really like what Trump uses the term, dirty cops.
Yeah.
Same thing, the James Otis Jr. story of him standing up against this, these handwritten warrants, law enforcement, basically not following the proper process, not respecting the rights of the people. It's what he stood for. And people hear, man, people hear that story at LFU, and that really sticks with people.
Yeah, it does. And it is one of the most inspirational stories that, one of the, I say story, it's not a fiction.
Original whistleblower,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, he is the original whistleblower, and it's history. So, in 1821, JC, I can't get rid of these goosebumps today. I'm just, I don't think people understand how disturbing this is.
Those are the founders rolling over in their grave.
I know, it has to be. In 1821, Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter to his friend Spencer Roane, and he said, "The great object of my fear is the federal judiciary, that body like gravity ever acting with noiseless foot and unalarming advance, gaining ground step by step and holding what it gains, is engulfing insidiously the special governments into the jaws of that which feeds them." That's the perfect example of what we have here today.
Well, if this continues, I think, tell me what you think. I believe that, and of course, this will cause a confrontation eventually, but I think that the U.S. Attorney's Office should pull these prosecutors. The judge can't them prosecute a case.
Yeah,
like, this
exactly
is our
right.
motion. We're not going to process. The case is garbage. We told you it's garbage. We're not going to prosecute a garbage case. And they don't show up.
Right.
Don't show up.
Yeah,
and
don't
then
show
Flynn's
up.
Not in jail. The judge doesn't have officers.
Mm-mm.
So what are you going to do?
And that's what Alexander Ehrman said. The judiciary has no sword and no force.
And if he presses?
No power of the purse, no power of the sword.
If he presses, then DOJ should send their officers, put this judge in cuffs, mm-hmm. and drag him out of that courtroom.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
you're absolutely
what should happen.
Right. Yeah, because they don't have... Here's the thing. Once the prosecutors refuse to prosecute the case, technically they're not even parties to the case anymore.
Where is Congress, by the way? This court exists at the... This was created by Congress, or is this one of the original? I don't know.
No, this is a lower court, so it would have to be at the pleasure of Congress. So the only court that doesn't exist at the pleasure of Congress is the Supreme Court.
So they need
Of the lower courts are established as Congress sees fit.
So Congress could impeach this judge and send him packing.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to read another letter. Thomas Jefferson really had a distaste for the judiciary. He wrote this letter to Thomas Ritchie in 1820. He said, "The judiciary of the United States is the subtle core of sappers and miners, constantly working underground to undermine the foundations of our confederated fabric. They are construing our Constitution from a coordination of general and special government to a general and supreme one alone. This will lay all things at their feet."
I said before, I think the judiciary is the greatest threat to our liberties.
But historically, JC, that is absolutely accurate. When I teach at Liberty First University the history of the Constitution, we go through the 700 years. It is always the judiciary combined with, it's always the judiciary the king combines with to become the ultimate authority. Because I don't know, you're the former pastor, you can tell me. There's something hardwired in our brains, spiritually, I believe, to have a trust for judges.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's there's judges from the very beginning in the Bible. God is the supreme judge of the universe.
Sure.
And so we're wired that way.
It's a character of God himself.
Yeah.
But you have to have righteousness.
Exactly.
To, you know, you have to have virtue, what our founders called virtue.
Right.
Right? That's the righteousness.
But
think
about this.
For that to work.
Yeah, when I teach all the time, right? So you and your business partner have a multi-billion dollar business and you're having a contract dispute. Do you go to the local Circle K gas station, drive up and find the first guy that jumps out of the car and says, hey, will you please tell us your opinion on whether who's right or wrong in our billion dollar business? Who's going to do that? Nobody's going to do that. But you go into a courtroom, you don't know if it was that guy at the Circle K or not, because he's still a complete stranger.
Right.
Sitting in an elevated bench in a black robe.
There's a magic black robe on now.
With a magic black robe on.
They're like wizards.
Yeah. So you have somebody, and people are like, Chrisanne, you're a lawyer. What are you saying? I'm a lawyer because I know the truth.
Is this sorcery? Is this what we're dealing with? What's with the robe?
Well, that's why I said it's got to be spiritual, right? There's something spiritual happening here. I mean, the Pope wears a robe. Priests wear robes. In the culture, the priests wear robes. Maybe that's an extension of that. I'm just sort of, you know, grabbing at the spirituality of that.
No, but I think so. It's like this sacerdotal, what they call sacerdotal origin. You look at the Old Testament priest and the mm-hmm. robes and stuff. And I've said that before. That keeps kind of, you know, popping up in the discussion when you hear these judges and how they act, how they talk, and then the terminology that's used in the system.
I talked about it yesterday in the show after you were gone. You know, I sat in the courtroom in Kansas. The federal court judge looked us in the face and said, the Constitution says what I say it says.
I wholeheartedly believe that it is a form of self-deification that is prevalent in America's judicial system.
And you have to have a moral, virtuous person
mm-hmm.
to be humble enough to do that.
To be decent.
And they're out there, okay? There are judges. I personally know them, okay? Some I call dear, dear friends. The problem is, as Richard Henry Lee said, the system is not geared to protect against what men will do, but also what they may do. And so when you have a system with these checks and balances in them, you can't have a judge sitting on the bench and saying, okay, you know, I don't like how the prosecutor's doing his job, so now I'm going to be the prosecutor. It's not how it works. And this is an indication of someone who doesn't have the virtue or the humility to do the job.
What is the immediate move in response to this judge's actions? What is, because I look at the judges and it seems like they're accountable to no one. There is no check on them.
Mm-hmm.
So what should happen? Is it, as we said, the response from DOJ? Congress do something?
Oh, but you see, there are lots of checks and balances, JC. They're just not working, right? So
what is supposed to happen?
What's ironic is this is why we're supposed to have the whole Bar Association.
Right.
Right? So the whole Bar Association, the whole gauntlet that we have to go through from this private NGO to tell us whether we can practice law or not, is there not so we can pass an exam and prove our aptitude. It's supposed to be a governing body that monitors and governs and sets up a check and balance for misconduct. And so outside the system, right? So people say, oh, well, you have the lawyers in the system and the system checks and balances, like you said, the IG, right? So the whole purpose for the Bar Association is to be an external body.
The purported purpose.
The purported purpose. Yes, thank you. The purported purpose of the bar is to be an external body outside the system, to be a citizen check and balance.
The problem
but
is
it doesn't
we know
work.
That's not the case. They're not answerable to the Constitution. They're not answerable to the people. That's not their standard. That's not who pulls their strings.
Right.
And so it doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen. So what should happen is there should be bar complaints filed against this judge. He should be the chief judge. in the circuit should pull him from the bench and tell him, you have compromised your integrity in this case. And the chief judge should pull him from the bench and replace him with someone. Recuse him forcefully because you have compromised your integrity in this case. And it's public. You've publicly compromised your integrity in this case. He should be investigated by the Bar Association. He should be censored. He could even be disbarred. He could also, the check and balance could be an impeachment. This is bad behavior. This is clearly bad behavior by the terms of his tenure. Most people think the judges have lifetime tenure. They don't have lifetime tenure. Their tenure is based on their behavior. So you engage in bad behavior and you're to be impeached. He should be impeached. Congress should be impeaching this judge. The
could they start with a censure? Could they give a shot across the bow?
Yes.
With a censure?
Yes. They could say, stand down and take the motion by and act accordingly to the motion by the prosecutors. The prosecutors could file motions to have this judge recused from the case the same way the chief judge could autonomously do that. So the prosecutors could file for recusal to the chief judge, which would give him the authority to recuse so he wouldn't have to be all on his shoulders, right? And so there are so many checks and balances in the system that are being completely ignored. And that's what I tell people all the time. Do we need to fix the system? No, we need to follow the system. We aren't following the system. We have become so universally ignorant as to how every part of our constitutional republic system works. That we've been driven into complacency and compliance through our ignorance. I mean, what do I know? I didn't go to law school. Why do you have to go to law school to understand how the judicial system is supposed to work? It's not rocket science. I'm not asking you to tell me the intricacies of Rav V. City of St. Paul and how Scalia gave his opinion about hate speech. I'm not asking you that. I'm asking you to know how the system is supposed to work in its checks and balances. It's very linear, JC. It's very
flow
chart. It's lockstep. Yeah, it actually is.
I just would love...
We need a judiciary t-shirt, JC.
I would love to understand.
We need a judiciary t-shirt.
I would love to understand one day why judges are seen as so sacrosanct.
I'm telling you, it's spiritual. It's spiritual.
I cannot wrap my brain around it.
Yeah. We need, show them our t-shirts, JC.
Speaking of t-shirts, yeah, make sure you go to godgunsliberty.com. Well, you'll find our t-shirt shop. You can go to chrisannhall.com and you can find the shop there. I'm putting that t-shirt up.
Okay.
It's not there at the moment.
This t-shirt.
Yeah, I got to get all the LFU t-shirts back up. But this is the latest. That's from the meme. Peaceful noncompliance is not breaking the law. Peaceful noncompliance is what we the people engage in when the government breaks the law. That's a quote from Chris Ann Hall.
That's a quote from Chris Ann Hall.
So we got that one on the flag, and this is a flag silhouette with liberty is essential. It's got due process, then it has the five elements of the First Amendment and plus the right to keep and bear arms on the camouflage stripe there. These others
almost
on the red
center
stripe. Yep.
Linchpin there, the thing.
So that's a few.
So we've had a couple t-shirt ideas. I forgot to tell you the t-shirt idea because you don't have a Founding Mothers t-shirt up there, and our ladies love the Founding Mother t-shirts.
Yeah, I just have to transfer those over.
Okay, but we have a new one.
Okay.
Mercy Otis Warren, we will stand against tyranny today or our children will bow tomorrow.
Yep, great one.
That's a great one, isn't it? Yeah.
All right, well.
Well, we've had a whole
show
today. Thank you
for enlightening us
yes.
on this judicial lunacy.
And I fear, JC, that you won't hear the depth and understanding anywhere else. You'll hear a lot of ranting. You'll hear a lot of politics. You'll hear a lot of speculation. So what I'm going to ask you guys to do is just share this. Share this to everywhere. I mean, send it to Tucker Carlson. Maybe he can learn from it, too. I don't know. But send it everywhere. We need to get the people educated. I don't know if I know that Donald Trump likes to watch YouTube, so maybe somebody sent him that and he can see how it's supposed to work. And Barr, maybe we can give him some clues and some ideas as well. God bless you guys. Thank you so much for joining us today. We will see you tomorrow.